If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
You've been listening to Old Salt Union and the lead track from their latest album, Where the Dogs Don't Bite. That was God You Don't Need. Old Salt Union has been making string music for about 7 years now. And what's impressive, aside from their talent, is their eclectic sound, even though they are a string band who play very traditional music. they blend several styles to make up their own very unique sound. Jesse Farrar is a vocalist and bass player with the band. He probably has the greatest insight into their music and place within the bluegrass and greater music community, so it was great to sit down and talk all things Old Salt Union with him. Our conversation started when I asked how the band hooked up with producer Allison Brown, who has a very impressive recording career both as an artist and producer.
Yeah, so the first time we met Allison was 2015. We kind of, this is four years ago. Mm-hmm. We took a chance and we drove 20-some hours up to Northampton, Massachusetts, and we kind of gathered up all the money that we had to enter this band competition up at the Fresh Grass Festival up in Northampton. And we're kind of the long shot up there, and we didn't really put a lot of hope into it, but we were kind of, you know, because up in that area, you got the Berkeley kids and all these kids that are just really great at their instruments and, you know, really, really tuned into the traditional sound and all this stuff up there. So we were kind of going up there as the underdogs, and you know, obviously we always kind of believe in ourselves, but we kind of knew that the chances were slim of us winning. But as fate would have it, we won. I think we were just different enough to where the people there enjoyed it enough, and Allison Brown happened to be one of the judges for this band competition.
Oh wow!
So so one of the prize of winning this was a main stage slot at the Fresh Grass Festival the next year, 2016. But also you got to come to Compass Records in Nashville, Tennessee, and record a single. They would give you one day and you could record a song just for keepsake, you know, whatever. And so so somewhere in 2016, we went there and recorded a song, and we thought it really, really well. And then come 2017, you know, we kind of kept in contact. We played the Fresh Grass Festival, met back up with Allison, talked to her quite a bit. And then come December of 2016, January 2017, they had offered us a record contract. So it was kind of this snowball effect of just kind of being in the right place, right time, being prepared for the opportunities that would present themselves, and it all kind of worked out. And then so 2017, we recorded basically a re-recording or reimaginating or rearranging of all of our prior material mm-hmm. with Allison kind of overseeing it. So then this year, well, I guess that was 2 years ago. So then 2019, with Where the Dogs Don't Bite, was our first album that we got to sit down with Allison and kind of start from scratch. So, so she kind of had more hands on this record. We were kind of more comfortable and able to veto ideas and to bounce ideas off each other, cause we were just more comfortable. We'd known each other for, you know, 4 years at this point. So it was much more organic this time around. So yeah, I mean, having her behind the board has been amazing, and having her in our lives and in our band's life has been a real treat. So
the other thing that's cool and I think helps with your sound is that, you know, like Old Salt Union, she blends jazz, bluegrass, rock, blues, and all kinds of music
absolutely.
Into her own sound. So it just makes a lot of sense as your producer that she would be hands-on, because you're a string band, you're not a typical Newgrass band, let's say. There are different paths that you take in so many different ways that set you apart probably from other bluegrass outfits, and Allison's expertise probably helped a lot in that manner.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, she kind of has this this fearless creativity that I think we have. You know, it's where if an idea sounds cool, you know, we have no restrictions, and neither does she. You know, we don't sit there, and we don't have to conform to a traditional grass band. We don't have to conform. If there's a hip hop feeling that we want to chase, let's chase it. Let's see where it goes. You know, and she's very much that way as well. And she's also like the most supportive, you know, of that ideology. So if we were like kind of backing off of an idea, she'd be like, no, let's explore it. Let's see what happens. And then we would, and either it would work or it wouldn't. But either way, we explored it, and we knew that there was no bounds and no boundaries with her, as there isn't with us. You know, we go into records with, or songwriting in general, with no like predisposed disposition as to what we're supposed to be doing. You know, if we want to write a rock and roll song using our instrumentation, that's what we're going to do, you know, and I think she picks that up and she spits it back out at us just the same. So yeah, I mean, it's a really, really, cohesive unit, us and her. And I, in the foreseeable future, I don't see why we wouldn't continue to work with her in every aspect, you know?
The album is eclectic, and you guys are all eclectic in the band. You have a hip-hop production background, and the other guys have other backgrounds, obviously. I'm curious about a demo for Allison, or did you just come, like you said, to the whole situation in a totally organic way where you all had songs that you wanted to see the light of day? How does that process work for you guys?
We, like I said, it had been a couple of years since we had released original material, like a full album of original material. Mm-hmm. I think it was 2015 when it was completely new original material, you know. So right. It had been a while, and so it had been about 4 years of song. You know, we write songs consistently, and we're on the road consistently, so right. We're always writing, and we had like this song bank of stuff, and we had ideas of what was going to go on the next record. We had whatever, but. As it was coming, yeah, we were shooting demos over to Allison over the course of 2018, saying, hey, we're thinking about this, thinking about that. But by the time we got there in the studio in March of 2000 or in November of 2018, rather, everything had kind of changed. We had these new ideas that, you know, because we're ever changing, we're ever growing, mm-hmm. we're consistently practicing individually and consistently practicing as a unit. So by the time we got to the studio, we had all these new ideas, like, man, and we had gone through two guitar players at that point too. Right. You know, at this point we had landed with Graham Curry, who's phenomenal young. He's 21 years young and he's just amazing. And so things just changed naturally. And so by the time we got there, I think we had two or three songs that made it on the album that were pre-thought of, and mm-hmm. maybe we'd sent demos. But other than that, the week of, we had riffs and we had ideas and we had choruses, and we had practiced the night before. We'd say, hey, this is kind of what we're thinking is going to go. You know, we practiced like two or three songs, say we're going to try to knock these three out tomorrow. We'd show up in the morning, we'd play them with Allison, we'd rearrange, she'd throw her ideas, our two cents. We kind of have this, you know, this weird osmosis of creativity, and then we'd go on and lay it down. And that was kind of the way that this record went. So I'd say about 70% of it was almost unimagined or unrealized going wow. into the studio, which was really, really nice. And it was the first time we'd ever really done that. You know, prior to this, we had sat down with, you know, and worked on our click, you know, put a click track on and practiced with a click track and had our arrangement solid. And, you know, that's just how we go in the studio and we try to knock it out as quick as possible. So it was really nice just to sit down and have this really creative space. And I think it shows with energy and with, yeah, like you said, the eclectic, it just kind of shows that it was kind of an organic, more fun and freeing process.
Yeah. We're going to get into the songs, a few of the songs in just a second. How long did you have in the studio with Allison? I know that, you know, because you're always on the road, it's hard to carve out time, but obviously with a new record and while bringing, you know, 70% of it totally fresh, I would imagine that you had to spend a lot of time in the studio.
Well, it was different this time in that regard. Just like I said, you know, prior to this album and the last album, but you know, prior to those two, we had to fund everything ourselves. So when you're funding everything yourselves, you're trying to get as much done in the shortest time as possible, right. to save as much money as possible. So but we didn't want to do that with this record. We knew, listen, we only got so many shots at making a really good record, and now some, you know, more eyes are on us than ever before, and you know, it's time to do it right. So in hindsight, we did most of it in the first 5 days. We did it in the first Monday through Friday, but we did go back because Nashville's kind of in our back. I mean, it's within 4 hours of St. Louis, so we did go back, I think, for two other, you know, 1 or 2 day sessions where we just went in and you know, fixed some stuff, remixed some things. And so we did take our time, you know, and Brian, our manager, Brian Lippman, we were ready to drop the album in March of this year. And he's like, let's, you know, and we were all kind of bummed about it at first. Like, dude, we got the album. Let's drop it now. We got to go. Mm-hmm. And he's like, hey, let's take a step back. Let's all go back to the studio. Let's listen. And I'm glad he said that, because we went back and we fixed some things that, you know, when anytime you walk away from a record, there's always things that you wish that you had done better. I mean, it's just the way of the way of the beast. You know, you're never going to be 100% content. But because we took these extra couple months of listening and going through it and going back, it's about as close as you can get, you know, walking away from a project. So, and being content. So, right. So yeah, I mean, we took our time with this, and we wanted to make an actual product rather than just a potpourri of songs that work together, and you know, no real plan or plan of attack. And I think this one, we just kind of took our time and tried to do it as right as we possibly could, you know.
The results certainly do show themselves on this record. It's a great record, and like we've been saying the whole way through, it is extremely eclectic, and it's good that you took the extra time. Let's talk about a couple of songs on the record. The first one is God You Don't Need. It's, you know, like all good songs, it's about a relationship that's gone bad, and there are these beautiful strings and the really compelling banjo medley. You sing on this song. How much activity did you put into the writing of the song itself, like the lyrics, versus does everybody have a hand in the instrumentation between the banjo and the strings and everything else?
You know, with my songs in particular, I'm kind of a little bit of a snob. When I'm sitting down and writing a song, I'm kind of imagining everything when I write it. You know, so for God You Don't Need in particular, there are songs where I bring a portion of it and we kind of glue it together as a band. But God You Don't Need was kind of almost all the way around kind of my brain, you know, my brainchild. That guitar intro, I think John did come up with that fiddle melody, that John did that. But more or less, it was kind of, you know, we didn't have a really crazy, there's not a solo section necessarily, there's not really any crazy instrumentation, and I think me and Ryan Murphy, the banjo player, sat down and worked on that banjo part together, because I really wanted this really dissonant banjo line where, you know, he's playing these notes that are half step apart. It almost kind of puts you on the edge of your seat a little bit. Mm-hmm. It almost feels uncomfortable, but and that was kind of the idea, was, and it goes along with the theme of the song as well, you know, kind of this give and pull, this kind of uncomfortable situation, and that's kind of what I was striving for with that. And but you know, also it takes a band to make that stuff come to life, you know, so with all those things considered, it all came together really well as a complete unit. But and then the lyrics, I mean, the words to me are kind of an afterthought. I take it serious, but you know, once I have like a good tagline, or if I have a good you know, a good melodic line for the words, I, you know, once I get into the creative space of the studio, like I wrote a lot of these words in the studio. I mean, obviously, because a lot of the stuff wasn't completed, but you know, a lot of stuff you sit down, and once you get into that creative space, because it can be tough to force yourself to sit down and be creative, you know, but usually when you're in the studio, everybody's kind of firing off on all cylinders. So I always found it easier just to write there, you know, and you're kind of immersed in the song. You've been listening to it for 2 hours, you know, whatever, you're kind of just really subjected to it. So you get to kind of understand and feel the ins and outs of the song, what you're trying to say. So, that song was actually the one song. We were probably about 4 or 5 songs in, and I felt like I didn't really have a good anchor song yet. And in past records, I usually had one going into it, a song that I'd written that I'd known all the way through. I was like, yeah, this is going to be my anchor song. No matter what other songs are on this record, I know that this is going to be one that I'm going to be proud of. And I remember halfway through God You Don't Need, I was like, okay, this is going to be my anchor song. And whatever happens from here, I can be content with my songwriting or my, you know, my song arranging on this record. So, I was proud of that song, and I'm proud of the way it turned out. And it started to become we just started playing it live, so it's starting to become more of a staple in our live shows. So it was neat, and I'm glad it came together the way it did.
That brings up two questions. The first one is, upright bass is a pretty physical instrument in that it's standing right beside you, and you have to play along with the band. I mean, you are the one who is the click track, keeping all things together. Sure. I'm curious about how difficult it is to sing and play upright bass.
I don't know. Because I've been doing it for so long. I try to think back as to when I even started. I would guess when this band started, was the first time I really, because prior to this, I was a jazz bass player. I majored in jazz performance at Eastern Illinois University. And so anytime I was playing upright bass, I was not singing, you know. And I guess the beginning of this band in 2011 or 12, it was the first time when I was, because other than that, I was singing on, you know, I was writing all the songs on guitar and all that stuff, which I still do. But yeah, I guess it kind of started with this band. I guess I kind of remember it being kind of a tongue twister early on, you know, playing ones and fives, and you're kind of dancing around. Meanwhile, you're trying to, but at this point, I mean, I don't even think about it. It's just part of, you know, what I do. We do 200 something shows a year, and kind of just becomes muscle memory at that point. But I guess I do remember early on that it being kind of a tongue twister, you know, having to do both of those. But like I said, I'd always been singing. I'd always been singing and playing instruments. I remember, I was playing drums at the age of, you know, 9 and 10, and I would be singing and playing drums in bands, you know, and so I already kind of had the coordination thing, you know, with my voice and what my hands were doing kind of down. So it wasn't too difficult. And I've, at this point, you know, the bass is kind of just an extension of me. You know, I when I get on stage, I don't know if I would even feel comfortable being on stage now, not having it next to me. It's like my dance partner, you know?
I think
I'd feel a little naked up there. So, it's second nature now, but I'm sure there were some moments where it wasn't.
I'm also curious, the record only came out, officially last week. So, I'm curious about the songs that are on the record and when you decided that these were songs that you were going to play on the road. I mean, a lot of bands road test material before they go into the studio. This is actually the opposite. This is you building the perfect song in the lab or songs in the lab and then taking them out.
It was weird. It is absolutely different. Yeah, it was very weird in that regard because, like I said, prior to this record, we had road tested everything. You know, we knew the parts that got people moving. We knew the parts that that were intricate, where people were tuning in. You know, and you're reading the crowd and you're figuring out what works and what doesn't work. It was significantly different. And our CD release party that happened this past Saturday in St. Louis was the first time we played 6 of the 10 songs. You know, we'd been playing about 4 of them. And so it was, you know, there was like 600 people, 650 people. And this is the first time we were playing any of these songs. And it was extremely stressful, and we're not really the nervous type, but, there was a different feeling. And just cause you don't know how people are going to react to this breakdown that we worked so hard on in the studio. Maybe it's going to completely miss, and maybe people aren't even going to care. You know, all this time we put into this well-crafted bridge, you know, and nobody gives a shit. It was stressful, and really now we get to kind of test is when the real test, you know, of the songs gets to happen. Is these kind of lower stakes shows, maybe some of these festivals where we can tuck one or two in that we haven't typically played, and we get to kind of figure it all out. It's certainly different, you know. And I think we're still trying to kind of figure out how to approach things, and you know, these songs are probably going to change. You know, in a year, if you know, when we're playing these songs, they're not going to sound like the songs that we recorded. You know, not completely, at least they're gonna, you know, they're malleable in that way, you know, when you're reading the crowd or when you're playing at a festival. So it was strange, and it still is kind of strange. And we played a festival last night, and we threw a couple of the new ones in there, and still we're like, we got to figure out the place where it sits in a set, you know, where does the song work. So yeah, we're still figuring it out, and we don't quite got it nailed down yet, but we're working on it.
Let's talk about a few other songs on the record. Tell Me So is, you know, a nod probably to the more traditional grass side of things, with lead vocals and songwriting from Justin. But you have a guest on that track in Bobby Osborne. How exciting was it for you to work with such an accomplished legend?
Yeah, I don't even know if it's really hit us how cool it is yet. I mean, we know we're very aware of how it's not lost on us how lucky and how amazing it is to do that. And proof of that is my dad, who's an old bluegrass player. And when I sent the song over to him, I think he was in tears, man. He was like, he was beside himself. But yeah, I think as time goes on, you know, he's 87 or 88, and to have somebody that's so prolific in the genre of string music. Not even prolific, but he pushed the boundaries, you know. He was one of the first guys that was pushing the boundaries of what Bill Monroe was doing and what Earl and Scruggs were doing. And he was taking these ideologies and stretching them, which is kind of, now if you're looking back to what he was doing in the 60s, and it doesn't seem like that crazy, but at the time, I mean, he was the guy that was stretching the boundaries, you know. He was the guy that was adding these minor chords and adding these weird, you know, 5-bar phrases and doing like, and that was what he was doing, him and his brother, you know, that's what they were doing. And, And it's not, I mean, it's kind of what we're doing now, you know, in a sense. And so all in all, I mean, I think it was such a amazing experience just to work with him, of course, and shoot the video with him, of course, was also fun. But I mean, he's amazing. He'll go down as one of the greats, and we're just so humbled that somebody was able to talk him into being on our record. I don't think it's really set in how amazing it is yet, but I think as time passes, it'll be one of the coolest things, if not the coolest thing that we've ever done, you know?
Well, I think your career is just, you know, starting off. So it's good. You know, I know you've been into this for a while now, but in terms of length of career, it's relatively new. And so
sure.
To have this as a signpost in your career is absolutely incredible. Did Justin mind giving away to Bobby on Mandolin?
Justin would have gave everything. I mean, we would have given everything. I think Allison had kind of mentioned it. Like, hey, you know what would be cool is if we got Bobby or Dell. I think the original idea was, can we get Bobby or can we get Dell McCurry on one of these songs?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, all of our eyes lit up. Like, yeah, that would be, you know, that would be as cool as humanly possible. But it didn't materialize for I think a couple weeks prior to recording. So I think we kind of all had in the back of our minds, like, man, that would be just about as cool as it could possibly get if it worked out like that. And I think there's some periods of time there where it looked like it wasn't going to work out. But I know that Allison sent the song off to Bobby, and then all of a sudden it came back one day, and I think we all just sat there with smiles. I mean, we were all just laughing. You couldn't help but just laugh about how cool it was. And Justin, I mean, and I think my harmonies are the ones that got booted, which was completely fine. I was like, yeah, get rid of them all. It doesn't bother me at all. So, and he really surprised us. I think initially the idea was he was just going to do the call and response, you know,
right.
just tell me so. I think that was going to be the extent of what he was supposed to do. But by the time the second verse rolled around and he was doing the harmonies on the whole second verse, and then he did the harmonies on the whole outro, we are just in awe, and just like I said, just giggly little boys. And we were willing to give up everything for that to happen. So we're glad it worked out. And yeah, it's just about as cool as it gets. So
Johann's Breakdown sees a lot of these jazz and classical progressions, something that you necessarily hear from a string band, and John Brighton's violin is again absolutely haunting. There's so much to talk about. There's the gypsy tinge off the top. I mean, there's just a lot going on. Is it hard to make a great instrumental instrumental song?
It probably would be, but it's not with John Brighton. John was a classical major, and he has this ear, and you know, he also took improvisational courses in college and all this stuff, which most classical majors don't do. And I was a jazz major, and I was in orchestra as well. But a lot of these orchestral players didn't understand music theory. They knew how to read what's on the page really well, mm-hmm. but they didn't understand, you know, music theory and how these chords work together and how, you know, all that stuff. So, but John, on the other hand, is almost like an anomaly in that world where, he could read what's on the page, and he understood the dramatics of string progressions and whatever. But he also knew theory, and he studied that extensively. So when John pretty much wrote this song in its entirety,
wow.
we kind of showed up and played our. But he had the entire fiddle part. He had all the harmonies worked out. He had, you know, when John puts his mind on something, he shows up. And it's the same with the song last record, Flat Baroque, which we actually originally recorded in 2013, but it's similar in that regard. He wrote it in a Baroque fashion, which is, you know, Baroque music predates classical music as we know it, but it had this very distinct style of progression and what chords went next to what other chords. And when he brings something to the table, it's just amazing. And and you know, that song in particular, Johann's Breakdown, has a very Stefan Grappelli gypsy swing kind of thing, which for me is great as a jazz musician because I don't get to, you know, walk bass lines much anymore.
Right.
So it was fun for me to be able to walk bass lines again. And we've been playing that the past couple nights, and that's been a really fun part of the show just to kind of break up the monotony of ones and fours and ones and fives and, you know, these simple chord progressions. It's really amazing. And He always has stuff like that swirling around in his head. I know he probably has about 10 other instrumentals probably right now swirling around in his head that will probably make their way on the next couple of records, and by that time he'll have 20 more. So yeah, it's just the way he operates. You know, he studied music his entire life, and he's taken it very serious, and it shows. And it's just so fun to write music with him and play the stuff that he writes, you know.
Where the Dogs Don't Bite is the title track, but what's interesting about this title track is that it's the last track on the record, and it has all kinds of amazing things going on. I counted three guitar harmonies, your stacked vocals, yeah. the group sing-along that makes you feel like you're at a bar or, you know, the corner pub right down the street, your local. Why is it at the end?
You know, we thought it would be different. You know, a lot of people either put the title track first or third, and it's the high point of the record. And I think with the idea of Where the Dogs Don't Bite, which it probably means something different to everybody else than it does to me. But to me, it means getting away from the stressors of life, or getting away from the negativity of life. And not even looking back. You're not looking back where the dogs bit. You know, you're going to where the dogs don't bite. You know, and that's kind of what it meant to me. And I think if you look through the track listing and what songs are all about, I mean, like you said, there's a lot of heartbreak. There's a lot of negativity. There's a lot of emotion and feeling. And I guess it's kind of a nice cap at the end. You look back and say, let's take a way down where the dogs don't bite anymore. You know, so you're kind of looking back at this album in hindsight, like we're leaving all that emotion and stuff behind, and we're going to Where the Dogs Don't Bite. And that was kind of I haven't talked to the guys about this, but that was kind of my thought process of it was, you know, and also it's like you said, it's kind of that closing time bar, you know, the Irish guys at the pub at the end of the night, it's last call, and they're all singing those Irish traditional tunes. And that's kind of how we wanted to end it as well. You know, it's kind of this hurrah, you know, the last call. Everybody's wasted and cheers it, and the bar's closing down, and that's kind of how we wanted to end it as well. It's kind of this homage to, you know, maybe a night at the bar, you know. So
it's great. It's a great ending. You are back on the road. There's no time to sleep, no time to eat. You're back on the road.
Yes, sir.
And that's where you make your bread, right? I mean, being on the road is what a band of your stature needs to do to get known, right?
Yeah, I mean, we took the grassroots route, and we're proud, we're happy that we did. You know, we didn't have a bunch of money, we didn't have a bunch of help or a bunch of people that were in the industry. The only way we knew was to just hit the ground running and not really look back. And we've been doing that for the past 7 years. And so we kind of had these last couple weeks of preparing the CD release and doing these in-stores and doing these listening parties. And it almost felt weird not doing anything. And so as soon as the record was done, we're like, okay, let's go. Let's get back to what we know. You know, let's get back to what makes sense. And, you know, obviously you hope that at some point you get to a point where, you know, you can make money off of a song on a commercial or a song on a movie or, you know, whatever. But in the meantime, we gotta hit the road. That's all we know. So, we're back. We're in Rockford, Illinois right now. We're heading to Minnesota tomorrow. Yep. And then, I don't know, Wisconsin and so on and so forth. So, it's just good to stay busy. And like I said, it helps our creativity. It helps us get back into the, not congratulate ourselves too much. You know, we got a lot of work to do and we're ready to do it. So,
It's so good. You are on the road for, most of the fall here, and, you're playing a few festivals, which has got to be cool. The Walnut Valley Festival and the Black Swamp Arts Festival. So, you know, you'll be able to gig with some of your friends and show some of your friends some of these new tunes, which is great too. Thank you for this record. It is, a breath of fresh air, and, we're psyched for you. And, we hope nothing but great things ahead for you guys.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, man. Thank you for taking the time, and thank you for the kind words. It's nice to talk with folks that took the time to listen to it and to really dissect it, either good or bad. It's nice to hear people that appreciate music, and it really means a lot to us, man.
Thanks, man. Be well, okay? We'll see you soon.
All right, thanks, Ira.
I continue to be surprised at how much I thought I knew about bluegrass and traditional string music, and how much I and you can probably still learn. Old Salt Union makes sincere work out of string music, and that's a testament to their abilities, but also their ability to stick with it, slugging it out on the road. Now, with some new songs. For tour dates and some cool videos, visit OldSaltUnion.com. Before we leave you, let's listen to the title track from Old Salt Union's latest release. Here is Where the Dogs Don't Bite.
It's a cold gray line between a cause and a passerby that takes you way down low where the dogs don't bite no more. It's hard to say if she's lying. She swears that she's a friend of mine. She keeps it way down low where the dogs don't bite no more. If I could find the key, I'd sing you a song. I'd unlock the doors and I'd be gone. See, I don't mind you wasting time. Burn through yours, you're wasting mine. That ain't no cause worth fighting for. Ain't no use in trying. Stand behind what you can't define. It takes you way down low where the dogs don't bite no more. Out of mind, out of sight. A memory in a box of pine. Then the birds don't fly and the dogs won't bite no more. If I could find the key, I'd sing you a song. Lock the doors and I'd be gone. See, I don't mind you wasting time. You burn through yours, you're wasting mine. There ain't no cause worth fighting for.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.